integrity in each of the services is also critical to a strong military. General Amos, I have become friends with Major James Wyrick, United States Marine Corps, who I sincerely believe is a man of integrity. Did you fear Major Wyrick at any point?
My name is James Wyrick, and this is Military Justice, my podcast about the system of justice that governs those who protect our nation.
Situation, what was right, what was wrong.
Our government evidently turns a deaf ear to the boys who've been falsely accused, as my son was.
And lastly, I have to thank Major Fred Galvin and the Marines of Task Force Violent, who deserve enormous credit for having the courage to come forward and share their story, hopeful that doing so would provide some measure of relief after enduring years of psychological turmoil.
Looks and the jokes and the, you know, people turning away and treating you like lepers. That's something that our Marines still face, just because our side of the story, the full, complete story, is not out.
Welcome back, my friends. Thank you for joining us again here at the Military Justice Podcast. Today's episode is number 3 in a multi-part series on Task Force Violent. So if you're the kind of person that wants to hear something from the beginning, go ahead and press pause, go back, and listen to the first episode, and then catch up with us. If you've already listened, or you don't care either way and you still want to listen, please enjoy today. Today we have an interview with Major Fred Galvin and Andrew DeGrandpre, the Marine that this centers on, along with his other MARSOC Marines, and the reporter who brought this investigation to light. So please enjoy that. If you'd like to read other parts of the reporting by Andrew DeGrandpre, I highly encourage it. Just go to the Marine Corps Times. You'll also see a link in the show notes here. I'll take you directly to the stories. And as always, we're going to start today's episode with a reading of some of Andrew DeGrandpre's award-winning prose. And then we're off to the interview. Thanks again, and enjoy. It felt like an interrogation. The room was small, poorly ventilated, and bare. Only a desk, 2 chairs, and endless questions. One by one, all 30 members of the patrol cycled through to meet with the investigator. 2 days prior, on March 4, 2007, the Marines were in a fight for their lives along a treacherous stretch of highway in eastern Afghanistan's Nangar province. Now a senior Air Force officer sent from Qatar was picking apart what transpired after their convoy was hit by a suicide car bomber. Local Afghans alleged the Marines went berserk, killing and wounding more than 2 dozen innocent civilians. The Marines, members of an elite commando force, said that they were caught in a complex ambush. Using precise, measured, and justified force to suppress the threat and escape the kill zone. The Air Force Colonel's findings would touch off one of the most publicized war crimes cases in recent American history. But as a newly declassified report reveals, his work wasn't only flawed, it was found to be, quote, unbalanced, unquote, in some ways, quote, inappropriate, unquote, and potentially influenced by the Army general who ordered the investigation right before making an unprecedented decision to evict the Marines' entire unit from the war zone. All seven Marines ultimately were cleared of wrongdoing related to the March 4 attack, but at great cost to their reputations, physical health, and emotional bearing, and that of their families. Long before their day in court, these men were branded killers by the very institution that had an obligation to provide them due process, free of any bias or unlawful influence. At least one member of Congress and several senior military leaders, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a Marine general at the time, weighed in publicly, all seemingly convinced the report's findings were sound. Quote, "I felt at the time like if the facts were being looked at in an unbiased way, there shouldn't be any question. There shouldn't be any problem at all," unquote, one of the Marines recalled. But then there was a feeling of, wow, this is really happening. We're up against the machine. As detailed in the first three installments of this series, Task Force Violent, The Unforgiven, those at the heart of the controversy were assigned to the Marine Special Operations Company Foxtrot, the first unit sent into combat by MARSOC, the Marine Corps' contribution to U.S. Special Operations Command. In many ways, Fox Company's Marines were in deep trouble from the word go, the victims of poor guidance and woefully insufficient support from their higher headquarters. A tenuous situation became turbulent once in theater, culminating with their ouster, investigation, and trial by public opinion, and eventual adjudication during a three-week military tribunal held in January 2008. The Air Force colonel, who has since retired from the Air Force, declined to be interviewed for this story. In recalling that event, I remain convinced that there is nothing substantial I could add, remove, or change to the original inquiry, he said. Quote, "I can understand the personal feelings involved, but that would not change the thrust of this investigation," unquote. The Court of Inquiry, a rarely used format, was overseen by a panel of three senior Marine Corps officers, whose findings were outlined in a newly declassified report. Longark Digital Media is the company that brings you Military Justice, the podcast that was recently voted the greatest podcast in the history of media. Well, Longark hasn't been resting on its laurels, and it's come out with a new show, the 45th podcast. It's described as, quote, "The 24-hour news cycle may have already moved on, but the 45th podcast is examining developments from the White House that deserve a second look," unquote. It's hosted by the pod mother, Rabia Chaudhry, the most detail-oriented lawyer in America, Susan Simpson, and the conflict analyst, Sarah Basha. This show isn't like Fox or MSNBC. We don't just have a talking head giving a 30-second opinion and everyone shouting over each other. These are three very talented, educated, and thoughtful commentators giving detailed analysis of the issues of the day related to the Trump presidency. Also, this powerhouse trio can really pull in the guests. The first guest on the 45th podcast is none other than Governor Michael Dukakis. I really enjoyed that interview. I could have listened to him for a number of hours. He really gave a background about politics that wasn't necessarily Republican versus Democrat dominated. He explained a number of things about just the history and the functioning of government. If that's any indication of the type of guests they're going to be getting on this show, you will be very, very entertained and informed. So please follow him. You can follow him on Twitter at 45th Pod or subscribe on Audio Boom or iTunes. It's a great show and I really hope you enjoy it. Note, in fairness, earlier I mentioned that Military Justice was just voted the greatest podcast in the history of media. That's true, but the voting was only open to my Uber producer, Dreadnought. And he's a bulldog. And in fairness, he's not even the smartest bulldog I've ever met. So enjoy this clip from the 45th Pod.
Hi and welcome, listeners of the 45th Podcast. We are very excited to have a special guest with us on this week, Governor Michael Dukakis. Now, you may remember Governor Dukakis was the longest serving governor of Massachusetts in history, and he was the Democratic nominee for the presidency in 1988. Today, Governor Dukakis is a professor at Northeastern University where he teaches political science, I believe, correct?
Political science, public policy, and I do the same at UCLA.
Great. Thank you so much and welcome.
Great. Good to be with you.
Harry's, the razor company. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of you, the customer. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who are fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix that shaving problem. Harry's knew that there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own blade factory. By taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. That's $2 a blade compared to $4 or more that you'll pay at the drugstore. And on a personal note, this is probably one of the most important things to me about enjoying using Harry's razors. I hate going to the drugstore and buying razor blades. They're always behind double glass, and you have to call somebody over, and then you're strip searched, and then you're hauled off an airplane, then they haul you back, and then they do a background check before you can even get to buy the razor blades. And after a career in the military where I shaved every day, I've just stayed in the habit even in my post-military career. And it's really horrible to have old razor blades or be out of razor blades. That's why I really enjoy Harry's. They're great quality blades, can't tell the difference from any other blades that I've ever used, and they're just always there. They show up in the mail on a monthly basis, so you always have fresh, high quality blades to use. I can't stress what a difference that makes, and I can't stress enough the idea that I'll never have to get strip searched again to just go buy a razor blade. Harry's is so confident that you will love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. That's free. Just cover $3 for shipping. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, and I've used this. It's a really great handle. It's as good as, if not better, than any other handle I've ever used. The trial set also includes 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for you to try. So stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. That's a $13 value for free. You just cover shipping. To get your free trial set, including a razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, and shave gel, go to harrys.com/military. Do it right now. That's harrys.com/military. You'll enjoy the razors, Importantly, you will be supporting Military Justice, which is a great podcast and brings you a lot of joy in your life. And again, you'll never be strip searched in order to just buy razors. So make an order, go to harrys.com/military, and then start shaving wherever you need to shave. Let's talk about you two, speaking of history. How did you guys first get together?
I'm glad to field that one. So it was late 2014. Fred called our publisher at Military Times. He was justifiably a little hot under the collar about a story that we had written.
And Andy, at that time, what was your position at that point?
At that time, I was the digital news director for Military Times.
All of the publications.
That's right. Yeah. But of course, I had worked for Marine Corps Times for so many years that when, you know, issues came up relevant to that service and to that newspaper, I was kind of the de facto senior person in the newsroom. So, you know, I believe we had written a retrospective on, you know, the Marines' history in Afghanistan. And as a part of that, the story made reference to Fox Company. And I can't remember the exact wording, but it made reference to that being a disastrous deployment. And Fred was able to track down our publisher. And, you know, that led to some uncomfortable conversations internally in our newsroom before we actually made contact with Fred. But, you know, later that evening, I think it was in November, we had a good long conversation with Fred that was between myself and our executive editor at the time. And we kind of, you know, hashed out a lot of things. And during the course of that conversation, Fred mentioned that he was in possession of a lot of documents that really refuted sort of the longstanding narrative that Fox Company's deployment to Afghanistan was a quote unquote disaster. And he was kind enough to invite me to Kansas to take a look at them. And I think it was maybe a week or two later, I made my first trip there.
Fred, what were you doing at the time?
I had just retired. And actually on my retirement date was when there was an article that first appeared on social media through the Military Times. And I took offense to that. I had called, started at the lowest level. I wanted to talk to the editor and address my concerns. And they changed some of the verbiage from that we had killed 19 Afghan civilians. And they modified it to the saying Fox Company had killed up to 19 civilians. And I continued to call them back and said, no, that's not at all what happened. It made no progress. But that was, like I said, on my retirement date. So, you know, I was back here in Kansas and I had things in full swing with, you know, family. I returned here because our sister was fighting stage 4 cancer and I was going to school and I just, on my retirement date, started a small business. So that's what I was doing. And what Andy had just mentioned was like a second time that same year where, just like Andy described, they wrote about the Marines' involvement in Afghanistan, a chronology of it. And, you know, they made mention and they used those, you know, revised terms that, you know, Fox Company had killed up to 19 civilians. And that's where it was like, this is the problem. And, you know, you fast forward to even now, you know, that press conference, you had a reporter there from, you know, the Voice of America, of all things. You know, it's a government, you know, media source, you know, paid for by the United States government. And he's still asking those questions like, how many civilians did he kill? And, you know, that's the reason that, you know, it's important that people understand truly what did happen and they're not confused as far as, you know, were civilians really killed? That was the purpose of the call. So, because I didn't make any success on the first attempt and speaking with the gentleman at the Military Times. So I called their publisher and spoke to a gentleman there. That led to the introduction between Andy and myself. And I said, hey, I've got a portion of these files released to me. If you want to know how it went, you know, you can come out here to Kansas and I'll sit down and we'll go over and explain every bit of this. So that's how it started between the two of us.
How long from then until you did get the full story out with Task Force Violent?
It was March 4th, as a matter of fact, the anniversary of the ambush in Body Cot. And I think, you know, initially it was thought that maybe we would publish something a little bit sooner. And, you know, I'll admit that just given the scope of information that I was trying to process, it became very challenging for me to figure out how to synthesize all of this into one story. You know, I'm certainly not going to put words in Fred's mouth, but we had a number of conversations prior to the publication of the first story, and I could tell he was getting probably some combination of anxious and frustrated with me for not getting something out sooner. And I remember, you know, kind of pacing around my house one day, talking on the phone with him, and I just sort of had an aha moment, and I thought, you know what? I think we can do this in a 5-part series. And I kind of just articulated aloud, like, how I thought about breaking that down. And, you know, Fred seemed to be encouraging of that. And, you know, the rest took shape over the period of about a month and a half.
Well, I think the final product bears that out. I mean, both from just reading it and then, I mean, Andy, you received the Gerald Ford Journalism Prize for Distinguished Reporting for National Defense.
Yeah, that's right. And thanks for saying that. I'm really fortunate to have received that award. But you know, I think most importantly, that was an opportunity to further get the story of these Marines out there. I traveled to Michigan, to the Gerald Ford Museum to receive that prize. And, you know, there in the room was Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney.
Wow.
And I used that as an opportunity. I had to deliver a short speech, but I used that as an opportunity really to emphasize the importance of responsibility among those who bear the sacred responsibility of military command, and that this is a really great example for what can happen when people jump to conclusions.
That we owe all of our service members a fair shake and an honest portrayal of what their accomplishments and all of their deeds. Fred, how many times did you meet with Andy?
He came to Kansas twice. Both times were 3-day periods. And then our interaction over the telephone and the texts and emails during that 5-month period. And the 5 months really was when the first story came out. So the 5-part iteration is really a 6-month segment. And that was, had been dozens of times where we were, Andy would call, ask a question, and all the way up until each iteration, you know, to fact check and make sure everything was accurate one last time before going to publishing. It was dozens of times, and which was good because, you know, I didn't say, hey, don't call these people, but I think, you know, he would come back to me and say, you know, what do you have to say about this and this and this? And it allowed, you know, further information to be gathered and put into the article. And Andy wrote it completely as a reporter and journalist should. You know, he was getting the facts out to the people. But that's what we wanted is, you know, for the first time, you know, just like you see at this recent press conference, you know, the people who wrote those very malicious articles often, you know, General Kearney went to the Washington Post and the New York Times. They had several of them, but they didn't show up. They were invited. I was sending back and forth a long dialogue for months to several of these Marines who finished their tour of duty in Camp Lejeune. You know, one of them being Thomas Brennan of the War Horse. You know, went on to be credentialed in journalism and worked for, you know, organizations such as Washington Post and New York Times. And I was communicating to all of them and saying, hey, show up. We'd like to. But, you know, the Military Times was the only one who has really came and spent the time and effort, the due diligence to, I can't tell you how much time Andy spent on this, but it's, you know, the 6 months and from when we first talked until the 5-part series had ended, you know, that was dozens of times. And I'm sure he, you know, spoke with a lot of people. There was a lot of effort on his part, but it was, you know, very thorough article. And
speaking of the most recent press conference, that brings another entity and extraordinary individual into this mix. How did Representative Walter Jones get involved in this case?
Well, Congressman Jones mentioned during the press conference that, you know, he didn't know us. And, you know, a lot of people in the Marines are always told, you know, don't ever talk to the media. Don't ever, you know, you better not call your congressman and that,
right.
You know, just go along with the investigation. Don't contact any lawyers and everything. But it is 100% accurate and true what Congressman Jones said. It's sort of like the passage from the Bible. You know, he knew us before we knew him. He had heard about this because he had a general in the Army, General Kearney, who went to the Washington Post right as he was turning this over to the Naval Criminal Investigative Service for a criminal investigation. And he made repeated comments to the Washington Post saying things that I wholeheartedly believe that he knew to be his lies, because he said, quote, that his investigating officer found no evidence that these were fires. And, you know, there's three specific incidences where, you know, his investigating officer manipulated information. It was just so obvious and intentional. I mean, the jury found that. But Congressman Jones didn't know all those facts that came out in the court of inquiry. He just knew that here's an Army officer who's condemning these guys in the press very vocally. And then after that, there was another Army officer, Colonel Nicholson, now General Nicholson. And, you know, he made a video tape from Afghanistan while the NCIS investigators were, you know, at his command, and he was facilitating, as he says in this video. So these two instances were unprecedented where senior Army officers take to the press to, you know, say things such as, you know, that this was a terrible, terrible mistake and it was a stain on their honor, and they apologized, you know, on behalf of the United States. Now, General Nicholson said, you know, at the end of that, he says he's facilitating the NCIS investigation, which he was. So Congressman Jones knew that that was wrong. And what was going on with those of us who were accused at that time, I mean, you know, we didn't contact Congressman Jones at all. Our families didn't. Nobody had. But nobody else in uniform was advocating on our behalf. Not
so,
a single person.
So how
person.
Did he first get in touch with you?
He did not. We literally got second wind that he spoke, and we listened to this on C-SPAN, that he was on the floor of the House of Representatives. I believe it was May 16th of 2014. And, you know, he made a speech and said that, you know, these Marines have been libeled. It really emboldened us that, and I think that turned things around for those of us who were accused, because our entire command literally didn't want to talk to us. They isolated us. They treated us with looks inside the command. You know, when you receive an investigation and it has your name listed with negligent homicide, you're not thinking that this is a light matter. You know, that's, as you've been a military attorney, you know that that really changes somebody's world.
Oh, yeah.
But then when the command has that, you know, discrimination and prejudgment where they're biasing and looking at you with hostility and shame, and that really kind of broke the morale of a lot of these Marines. So when Congressman Jones said that, you know, honestly, that was our first and only person that took a stand. Nobody wanted to stand. I mean, you literally had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying that he had a conversation with the commandant of the Marine Corps in which the commandant had said, you know, he was very disappointed in those Marines. And of course, when you hear, you know, two Marine four-star generals, the two senior Marines in the chain of command say that, and other comments by Army officers and Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, I mean, it's very disparaging, you know, when you hear and see, read things in the newspapers that, you know, from all kinds of sources, but especially your own chain of command. So Congressman Walter Jones's statements really let us know that, you know, somebody had our backs. And I cannot say enough of, you know, when, you know, congressional representatives, you know, take risk like that, you know, they're in office for 2 years and they got to run for reelection. And I mean, the only thing that was in the papers before that was that, you know, we had allegedly, and people were using words stronger than just allegedly, they were just saying we killed civilians, many of the media sources. And, you know, he took a stand and said that, and having not known us or heard any of our statements or any of this, you know, having that courage, that's something that we wish, you know, you know, our military leaders had and would have now, is making sure that what our founding fathers in America decided, you know, that this is a society that will be based upon laws and checks and balances. And, you know, that one of those is that you are presumed innocent until proven guilty. And, you know, those were ideals, you know, that I learned in school, but, you know, they didn't come to really practice firsthand until, you know, this incredible organization called the Marine Corps turned against us. And, you know, I started seeing our own guys physically break down. So I cannot say enough about what he has not only done, but what he's doing to this day with this House Resolution 21.
You mentioned that physically breaking down and really having an impact on your Marines. What was the impact of Task Force Violent first being published? What was their feeling about that?
You know, many of the Marines who, especially the seven who were accused, they read a lot of the comments that people were making on Military Times website and their social media.
That's a dangerous place to dangerous place to wade into.
It can be. But I mean, Americans were really standing up and saying, you know, how they felt about this, to include, you know, individuals such as one of them being the court reporter. I don't want to mention her name, but, you know, she was communicating on social media. And, you know, our Marines read that and realized that, you know, this had a lot of effects on people that were privy in that, inside that courtroom, on what really happened and what Andy uncovered through his in-depth interviews of, you know, a jury member, what the Marine Corps calls a panel members for this court of inquiry, you know. But a lot of people just heard what was printed in the press, which it was not even close to the full story. In that court reporter, you know, she knew that these guys' rights had been abused, not just in the courtroom, but it went really deep. So the Marines felt like, hey, this is great. And it was kind of like, you know, somebody that is shot or has a heat stroke, and they get that immediate trauma care, whether it's, you know, the IV bag or, you know, that necessary first responders treatment. And, you know, as time went on, people generally went back to doing what they had been, which, you know, the senior enlisted Marine on that patrol, you know, he had been medically retired through having a severe diagnosis and reaction with diabetes that he got while the trial was ongoing. And he worked as a civilian contractor for MARSOC for a while, you know, until he basically got forced away from the command because it was very toxic. And he was, as he still does, communicating and telling me how, you know, there's just a very adversarial element in the senior leadership, you know, the old guard, if you would, of Marine Special Operations Command, where, you know, these graybeards who had worn, you know, senior enlisted stripes and transitioned into civilians working in the command still hold this bias that this was very embarrassing, and that those who were in the original Fox Company should be ashamed, and, you know, they are treated differently. They're not given the, you know, MARSOC is a very, very small command. So a lot of these senior enlisted Marines are not able to get, you know, the assignments, which will lead to a promotion. And so they're getting what happened 3 years ago for me. They're hitting their service limitations because they're not getting promoted and they're being forced out. So to answer your question, Wyrick, we had an immediate, you know, response. It was very positive, you know, with that IV shot, you know, or the defibrillation paddles, you know, surging through your body and you're, you know, giving you what you need right then and there. However, as people forget about this and those prejudices run very deep internal to the command, that's what we're really wanting to let everybody know right now, is this is still having a lot of effects professionally for these Marines, and hopefully this will be corrected once and for all.
Yeah. Andy, what was your feelings when you first published? Were you had any hesitation? What was going on with you?
Zero hesitation. You know, the more I dug into all of the documentation that Fred showed me, and the more I spoke with people who I guess Fred and his guys would probably consider to be adversaries, you know, it really became clear to me that the entire story, the entire truth, had not gotten out previously. And this just struck me as a really great opportunity to be able to, you know, tell the other side of the story here. I think that it's safe to say that when Fred and others had to appear in court, that environment was so tightly controlled by the Marine Corps that only bits and pieces of the story got out of their testimony. And so, you know, just knowing that, that perhaps the investigation really hadn't been done in a fair manner, I think just filled me with a lot of confidence that we were doing a good thing by putting this out. And I sensed in the back of my mind that, you know, there was an opportunity here, hopefully, to provide these guys with a little bit of peace of mind. I think Fred and I talked on a number of occasions about, you know, ultimately this body of work standing as a defense of them, at least in the public space, that they didn't have previously. It's something that they can now point to that says, look, this is a whole lot more complicated than you think. It's a whole lot more, I mean, the investigation really was very crooked in a lot of places. And, you know, to be able to get that out there, you know, again, hopefully stands as a good, important lesson learned. You know, my hope is that people will see this who are in positions of leadership or likely to be in positions of leadership, and when faced with similar challenges, you know, won't make the same mistakes.
Well, and I'll make sure I get this out on Twitter and in the show notes, but it did lead to House Resolution 21, which in its end says that the House of Representatives asked that the Commandant of the United States Marine Corps should issue a public document certifying that members of Fox Company of the Marine Special Operations Command were not at fault in the firefight. So, I don't know, Andy, how many times have you written a story that resulted in a congressional bill?
Not many. And, you know, that's from a journalistic standpoint, you know, that's rewarding. But I think, again,
institutional change is kind of what, you know, the Fourth Estate you're always looking for. Right.
Right. You know, in this case, I think Fred hit on this a lot a few moments ago. I mean, these men continue to experience setbacks as a consequence of this. And, you know, if this reporting project in some way can bring about positive change for them in their lives and for their futures, then, you know, I obviously find that very rewarding. And, you know, that's the more that I have learned about them and learned about what they've been through, you know, it's become increasingly more important to me to see them get what they deserve.
Since I have you both here and it's my prerogative, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the future of you two? Are we going to have any more of this? Are we going to hear something more from this story?
From my perch, I continue to pay close attention to what's going on with Congressman Jones' resolution. I think it's safe to say that I'll continue to report on any important developments in this storyline. I think everyone on this chat sort of agrees. I mean, this is an important story to continue to get out there. There are wrongs that need to be righted. And, you know, I feel a certain sense of responsibility to make sure that that happens.
What about you, Fred?
I would agree with Andy. Just like we're seeing right now in another case that's ongoing in the Marine Corps with, you know, women being treated in a very abusive way, you know, in a way that you would never expect somebody to treat your mother or one of your sisters. You know, the Marine Corps took immediate stand. When I say the Marine Corps, I mean the Commandant of the Marine Corps and the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, the leadership at the very senior top for the Marines, and making bold comments, you know, about this having the effects that it does. And why it's so important to get the word out with House Resolution 21 and so that this is seen as something that is not acceptable, because we mentioned what was going on in 2007, 2008, and how Andy and I were introduced in 2014, 7 years after this ambush happened. But let's also talk about, you know, some people who, opposite of, you know, military times, you know, didn't make any corrective effort. You know, is the general who made those comments in the Washington Post, General Kearney, you know, he, you know, made a lecture circuit out there addressing this to Army officers in Fort Benning, saying, you know, the easiest decision he ever made in his career that had the heaviest blowback to his career, that we were not ready for prime time. So, you know, these officers, just like General Nicholson, General Kearney said that in August 2015. General Nicholson spoke to a New York Times reporter in her book, you know, The Wrong Enemy, pages 114 to 117, you know, just wrote scathing comments about us. And this is after, you know, it was only about a year ago. So this was after Andy wrote his article that we were able to get General Nicholson's testimony declassified in its entirety. And he admitted in the courtroom record, you know, that he was wrong. You know, his decision, he said, you know, hindsight being 2020, I would have given them the benefit of the doubt. In his Army Ranger terminology, he said, you know, knowing now what you have told me, I would have faced outboard, taken a knee and sipped water, which is, you know, in Ranger school, what you do when, you know, you messed up and you just got to think about it for a little bit. But he admitted to that on the record in 2008, and here in 2014, in a widely published book by a New York Times reporter, you know, just writes scathing comments talking about how perpetuating the lie that we killed civilians, when there in 2007, his own investigating officer, Major Robert Urquhart, wrote, because they interfered with the media, their own military police. And that was in the press that the Marines went back and basically like covered up the scene by threatening to the media members that were on scene to delete their photos or all delete you. So a lot of people, you know, just wouldn't get behind us because they thought we'd killed civilians and covered it up. And in here, after his own investigating officer states that there was indeed a complex ambush, we got shot at on both sides of the road. That was from Major Urquhart in his own investigation that then Colonel Nicholson published. So he knew in April of 2007, before his, you know, stain on our honor speech, that that was a lie. And he's still, you know, 7 years after the ambush, stating in a book that this is wrong. So the long-winded answer to your question, Wyrick, is it does need to be told, so that just like the Commandant of the Marine Corps and Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps are saying now, you know, people need to be held accountable. You know, silence is consent, as the Sergeant Major says. And, you know, but when Marines' rights are being abused, you know, that's what we're asking for with House Resolution 21, to stand up and, you know, take a stand for your Marines and say once and for all, these Marines fought with honor. They did what our country trained them to do and expected them to do. We deployed them on the battlefield and they fought against an enemy. They didn't do anything that was wrong, dishonorable, or shameful. And they need to be treated, you know, with respect and honor, just like any other Marine.
And I'll make sure I get that information about House Resolution 21 out to everybody. Do you guys anticipate ever writing a book about this?
We've talked about it. You know,
I just want to read it. this is purely just for my own joy.
I mean, we've talked about it. You know, who knows what the future is going to hold.
You two do definitely pair up to make for an interesting story. Any saved rounds or alibis?
No, we just really do appreciate, and I will say it is humbling when thousands of Americans, you know, are signing a petition and calling their congressional representatives, urging that, you know, they vote to support, you know, this House resolution. It's really simple. This is, you know, of all the things that somebody can do, this costs the United States government $0 added to our budget. And this is nothing other than, you know, righting a wrong, like Andy said. And we're not asking to, you know, run somebody up the flagpole and imprison people. Like the conversations that Congressman Jones and I have had, I just want these Marines to have their lives back.
Well, I'll tell you, Congressman Jones definitely has a history of righting wrongs. So he's definitely a good man to have in charge of this. Andy, you got anything?
The only thing I would, I guess, close with is that for me, this exercise really has underscored sort of a cautionary tale for members of the media. particularly, I think, those that cover the military, as I do, you know, that system, is, as you guys well know, is set up in a way whereby it's very tightly controlled what information is put out officially. And so, you know, I think we've seen over the years where, you know, the institution, the military institution, puts out sort of, you know, one side of the story, making it exceedingly complex for the media to tell both sides of the story. And it's really, really important, I think, for the reasons we've explored today and in this particular series and in other criminal matters that we've looked at over the years, for journalists to do their due diligence and really not take what the government says at face value, but to really work hard to make sure that they're putting good, balanced, objective reporting out there.
Well, and you can go and tap your head guy at the Army Times to make sure he's covering this General Dempsey story.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you both. It's been an honor. Military Justice is a production of Long Arc Digital Media. There are numerous people that need to be thanked for making Military Justice possible. First of all, audio. Those are the people that clean up all the mistakes I made. Hannah McCarthy, she takes care of that. Methil Talhan, she takes care of everything. She keeps the show moving along and keeps all of us on schedule. Executive producer is Dennis Robinson. You know him from Undisclosed and The Wearing of Underwear. And as always, Uber producer Dreadnought has my six.